A recent ruling has given companies more leeway to use unpaid interns and also makes it harder for interns to bring lawsuits against those companies. This decision reverses an earlier case that ruled Fox Searchlight Pictures needed to pay its interns because the work they provided was the same work that a regular paid employee would do.
A plaintiff in the case and an advocate for interns, Eric Glatt, joins us now to talk about that ruling. Eric, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, thank you for your interest in the story.
So tell us again why you brought that case against Fox Searchlight Pictures initially.
So I had become aware of the fact that the Department of Labor had issued a fact sheet outlining when one is a bona fide trainee versus an employee being called an intern. You know, having seen how widespread the practice was, particularly in the film industry and other culture production industries, and it just seemed really clear to me that employers were kind of getting away with something. And no one had really tested this in court yet, despite the fact that the Department of Labor had issued these guidelines. So, you know, after a certain amount of time trying to advocate sort of outside the judicial system, I realized litigation would had the potential of bringing this practice to a heel.
I use the phrase getting away with something, and when you were an intern, what were some of the things that you were asked to do that you felt maybe qualified as the Fox Searchlight getting away with something?
So I worked on the film Black Swan as an accounting clerk in the accounting department, and basically I did all the normal work any other accounting clerk who's being paid would do. Except on this production, they decided to call the job an internship just basically as a way to get that labor for free. And there were unpaid interns performing other similar entry-level-like jobs in other departments on the production. May have been even more than 24. I don't recall anymore. But, you know, that's kind of standard practice now, is we've created a culture around unpaid internships where we first say, well, it's students. So because they're students, it's not really labor. They're learning something. And then we say, well, they're recent graduates. They still haven't cut their teeth yet, so they're still learning something, so they're not really employees. And as long as the economy is really bad for young adults and people entering the workforce, there's always going to be this competition to get, you know, entries on your resume. And as long as employers have the, you know, a big labor market to pick from, they'll find people willing to do this out of a sense of desperation or the lack of other alternatives while they're just starting out, and basically give themselves free rein to save money.
So in that first decision from the court, the recent one, there was a definition. There was a rule put out there about how you determine who the labor benefits. Tell us about that, because it hinged on that decision.
Right. So in 2013, the district court in our case just upheld the Department of Labor guidelines. So the Department of Labor has issued a six-factor or six-element test derived from a 1947 Supreme Court case to say when someone's really a trainee versus an employee. And the district court upheld the Department of Labor's position, upheld our position, that we were really employees and we were owed wages, at least the minimum wage. Fox appealed that decision to the Second Circuit, and about 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, the Second Circuit, a panel of three judges, came back and said, the lower court had it wrong, the Department of Labor has it wrong. That Supreme Court case isn't closely reflective of what unpaid interns do today, and therefore we shouldn't be bound by it, and we're going to make up our new standards. And they just basically came up with seven non-exclusive criteria that they made up out of whole cloth, not based on anything Congress has ever said, and said this is the test that needs to be applied, and then remanded the case back to the district court to reconsider using this new test, whether I'm owed wages or not, and my fellow plaintiffs.
And so what does this new test change?
Well, among other things, it eliminates one of the most important parts of the six-element test, which was that the employer derives no immediate benefit from the work of the trainee. So basically, that's a core principle of the minimum wage. Once an employer is gaining something from somebody doing work for them, they have to pay the minimum wage. And as we all know, because of other activism, the minimum wage is embarrassingly low. It's a poverty-level wage that has not kept up with productivity or inflation. Asking an employer to pay that modicum wage for labor that helps them succeed in their operations doesn't seem like much to ask. But the Second Circuit doesn't apply that test. It creates this balancing of the benefits analysis, basically saying on an individual case-by-case basis, who got more, the intern or the employer? And it's that case-by-case basis that they want to now apply that will make it really hard for any interns to file class action lawsuits like ours, or like the class action lawsuits against other employers that have so far yielded over $26 million in settlements. If all circuit courts were to apply this new standard, these lawsuits that have so far been the only effective means of providing any stopgap to what employers can and can't do, they'll be dealt a severe setback.
We're talking right now with Eric Glatt, intern advocate, plaintiff in a legal case advocating fair pay for unpaid interns. And Eric, what about thinking about that intern-employer relationship? Some people might say that it's a symbiotic relationship, that the intern gets something by being there, learning, seeing things. The employer gets things because they do maybe get some help with their goals as well. So how do you navigate that?
Well, but that's been an element of the labor market for a long, long time, before the rise of unpaid internships. Entry-level employees learn something. Even experienced employees learn something when they get promoted or they're given a new assignment. That, as an aspect of employment, of having a job, I mean, that just goes with the territory. We always learn things. The idea that suddenly entry-level jobs are completely outside the scope of labor because you're learning a little bit more than you would once you have more experience under your belt, I mean, that's a policy decision. It's not reflected in the law. Congress has never said anything to that effect. The only times Congress has ever weighed in on questions about learning on the job, like for apprenticeships or the sub-minimum wage for teenagers, for student learners, those all include pay. So Congress has never really come forward and said, oh, here's a whole area where the work you do is going to be so outweighed by what you get out of it because you're relatively inexperienced that you don't deserve pay anymore. That's a policy decision. I mean, it's really my hope that these lawsuits bring the practice to a heel so we can finally have a policy conversation about what a responsible practice would look like rather than this ad hoc free-for-all in which colleges are complicit but not providing any oversight, and employers basically count on the fact that a young person starting off their career is not going to challenge them in court. They have too much at stake, and the employers, you know, sort of have the upper hand.
So you do want to start this cultural conversation. So do you think there is a place for unpaid internships at all?
You know, I actually think that the Department of Labor standards, if they were applied properly, wouldn't be that bad, except for the fact that even if you apply those standards, it excludes from the labor market, from all these positions, people who can't afford to work for free. Most unpaid internships happen during the summer. So if you don't come from a family with the means to support you while you're working full-time without pay, those options aren't available to you. You know, there's cases of one woman who came to Congress to intern in Harry Reid's office, and she was, you know, from a modest background and couldn't afford to live in one of the world's most expensive cities. And she went to Indiegogo, and, you know, that looks like, oh, technology coming to save the day. But really, I mean, she was begging for money in order to be able to afford this opportunity. Now, I would imagine most people in her position equally qualified to be an intern working in a senator's office, if they can't afford to move to D.C., they're just simply not going to apply.
And Eric, thank you so much for joining us and catching us up.
Oh, sure. My pleasure.
That was Eric Glatt, intern advocate and plaintiff in a legal case advocating fair pay for unpaid interns.